This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back, Lucha Luscious. This is a special episode.
It's special, but it's special in that it is the norm of the Lucha Undead get to know the PTBN PWO with a PWO representative tonight. We have from Greetings from Allentown, a new podcast to the feed. Peter, it's Winson, right?
Yeah, yep.
Peter Winson. Peter, how are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. I often get the cigarette with Winston. I got that like all through school, and I had an ill-fated run for student council where I tried to make it into like a cigarette ad, and they apparently frown upon that in Catholic high school. Use cigarette advertising. So, yeah, it's Winston.
Fake news is what I call it.
Hashtag fake news.
They were trying to smear your good name, saying that you were colluding with Big Tobacco to essentially.
And the funny part is, when I smoked for a long time, I never once ever smoked Winston's, like not even one time. I was always a Marlboro.
Let me ask you guys this, since you guys both used to smoke, Tim. I think you don't smoke anymore, right?
I don't.
Who's the Pepsi and Coca-Cola of the smoking brands?
Marlboro and Camel, I'd say.
That's what I figured. Yeah. Which one's Coke? Which one's Pepsi, though?
Because I like Coke, I would say Marlboro, but I mean,
Marlboro is Coke, Camel is Pepsi, Parliament would be Tab, and I think that Virginia Slim would be 7 Up. I don't know.
I was gonna go Newports or Sprite.
Where does Benson and Hedges match up with the current? LaCroix, okay. I used to work in when I was in college, my first job when I was going to school, was working at a Circle K, and I remember very vividly, it was one guy, the same guy had come in, and he always buy Benson and Hedges. And he seemed like a yuppie type. So I don't know if that's like a yuppie brand of cigarettes, I don't know.
That seems like a whatever they call it. It seems like the duty free brand of cigarettes. I feel like I saw a lot of Benson Hedges on my way into Canada.
Oh, okay.
I would always get like the one time it was, I think it was 99. I was going into Canada, and instead of the normal carton that they had, which is like the long tube rectangle thing, they had a carton of cigarettes that was shaped like a larger thing of cigarettes. So you would open it up and it would be really like a gigantic pack of cigarettes, but with 10 packs inside of it.
Wow.
And we called it like the Gulliver's Travel cigarettes and pretended like we were smoking like a 2-foot wide cigarette, but you know, that's just 20 year old me goofing around.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Well, okay. I mean, that's I think quite enough of the digressions there, Adrian.
Hey, I'm a curious cat, Tim. What can I say?
I didn't even get to introduce you. That's crazy.
Oh, go ahead.
Adrian Delatorre, the co-host for this evening.
Here I
am.
And
we like to open up the show always with the first question, Peter, which is, are you now or have you ever been a member of the PWO board?
It's funny because I've been a lurker now for so long, and there's so many areas on that board to go to. There's like the match part, there's the podcast part, which, you know, I've looked at even before I started doing a podcast on my own, and I kind of like bounce around to different areas, usually more like US-based wrestling, that sort of thing, and sometimes in the I guess non-wrestling areas, but I'm actually not a registered member, so I have to get myself in at some point, and like it said, I have to email Charles about that. And,
I guess that's the next step. Yeah.
I already talked to Chad and Kelly about that via Facebook Messenger. This is something I only started using Facebook 7 or 8 weeks ago for the show, so yeah. all that stuff is new to me, and I said, yeah, my email is rejected. And they actually said, yeah, you gotta talk to Charles. So I'll be kissing that ring very shortly.
Yeah, all a little peek behind the curtain, all PTBN, PWO business is done through Facebook Messenger, which is a lot of fun for, I guess, you and I, as we're not necessarily Facebook people. And, I mean, I found at this point, while I enjoy my conversation time with Chad, he's really the boss, just in a figurehead role completely. He's kind of the goodwill ambassador of PTBN.
Mm. What platform would you guys prefer over Facebook?
Twitter works.
Yeah.
Twitter.
I mean, I've been on Twitter now for, like, under my quote-unquote civilian account, because I created the show account to separate out the wrestling stuff so that, you know, all my regular friends are like, oh, you watch wrestling? Like, yeah, I do. and I have always vowed never to get a Facebook account dating to, like, 2004, 2005, like, in the early days of that. Like, oh, yeah, you got to join this thing. I was like, no, I think this Friendster thing's going to hold up. And failing that, I think MySpace is going to stand the test of time. And when MySpace, when that whole thing, I said, you know what? I'm done. No more. I don't want to figure out any more of these. So I went on there just for the sake of the show and to have Messenger. But Twitter, for all its faults, I'm much more nimble on that.
Yeah. I don't know why people don't use the Slack more. Slack's a pretty popular group chat app type thing that's available.
It works really well. I like Slack quite a bit, honestly. Yeah. But I guess, you know, like I said, Facebook is just where the business is done for PTBN.
And then you got to see, like, their real names, and you got, like, see who they really are, and it's like, you don't want that on the internet, you know?
Well, the best part was I created the show account on there, and I didn't use my name, and on Facebook, they have this thing where this crazy idea where people should use their real names.
Yeah.
So my identity for those purposes is GF Allentown. So that's my alter ego, Jeff Allentown, but it's Jeff spelled G-E-O-F-F Allentown. And, like, so none of my friends, like, knew I was on there. And then I went to a U2 concert about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I think there was one friend who knew I was on there. He tags me in the picture, and all the other people who were there, like 12 people, they all immediately figure out my secret alter ego. So my cover was then blown, but I don't really interact with them on there because I don't know how to scroll through stuff and find the pictures of their 2-year-old kid or whatever. Like, I just don't know how to do these things, and I'm too old to learn at this point.
Yeah. It's funny.
I
was just going to say, I didn't realize until now that I really am interested in hearing about people's social media habits, but go ahead.
Well, let's talk about not your social media habits, but your social life habits. Let's start out kind of, what is your basis of fandom, and what is it that you're the wrestling guy in your group of friends, I guess, and you're not the person hanging out with a bunch of mutual wrestling fans?
Well, a lot of the people that I'm friends with, they watched during the Attitude Era, you know, when it seemed like everybody was watching, where the guy in the group who wasn't watching and wasn't aware of who Steve Austin and The Rock were, that guy was the outcast. And now I'm kind of the outlier in that I came back to watching at a certain... I stopped watching for a very long period of time, from like 02 to very early 2014. So almost 12 years I went without watching any week-to-week TV. I was completely... I wouldn't say completely oblivious to what was going on. Like, I knew who John Cena was and this and that, but... You know, if you listen to my podcast, you notice I never, ever bring up anything from 2002 to 2013, because that's just not something that I know. But growing up in the Northeast, the territory system was dead by the time I was exposed to wrestling. So the wrestling that I knew was WWF. And the first show that I ever watched was actually the Royal Rumble, which kind of makes it interesting in that, yeah, it was the first Royal Rumble on, and it was on the USA Network. But I also remember the first segment that I ever watched of professional wrestling was the Dino Bravo bench press thing at the Royal Rumble. And the fact that I actually continued watching after that point is really a testament to the product hooking me in somehow to continue to watch. And I had periods where I didn't watch, like, kind of the common periods, like 94 to 96, when, you know, I guess the whole business was down. And then I jumped head first into the pool again in 97. And, you know, the way you jump back into these things is so weird. Like, I started watching again because I wanted to see Dennis Rodman on Nitro, which is kind of an embarrassing thing to admit because that guy isn't a wrestler, but that was who I wanted to see. So I guess that proves that the celebrity thing can work. But
hey,
for
you don't have to feel bad. I was at the pay-per-view that he was on. I was there.
Oh,
live.
Really?
The
one that he was drunk or the one that he was normal?
The one that he was normal, the first one.
97. Okay, so yeah, that was a good one. And when I came back this last time, there were two reasons why I started watching again. Number one was the network, which I didn't get right away because I can't remember the exact reason. I think it had something to do with that whole, if you remember when the network started, they had that $9.99 but with a 6-month commitment. And for some reason, I thought I had to keep it for 6 months, even though that turned out to not be the case at all. And I think I waited for like a month after the network launched before I actually bought it. The other reason why I started taking an interest in the product again, and this is kind of funny in that a lot of people were turned on again when CM Punk did the promo there in Las Vegas in June of 2011, and that brought people back into the tent at that time. Me, I was more interested in the holy crap reaction after Punk just walked out on everybody the day after the Royal Rumble in 2014. So I went online and like viewed every message board that I knew of at that time, and I was just fascinated with the reaction because from afar, CM Punk was a guy that I didn't really know at all, and he's always been a guy that I like the idea of more than I actually like CM Punk, if that makes any sense, because he is kind of a difficult guy and also kind of annoying on social media to the point where I had to unfollow him several times before I cut him off for good.
Wow.
I wonder if he's aware.
You know what I think it was with CM Punk? It was that Chicago Blackhawks thing where I want to be like, yeah, all right, CM, why don't you show me those pictures of Blackhawks games you went to in 2007, and then we'll have a conversation about the Chicago Blackhawks. Don't be sending me your pictures from the 2013 Blackhawks Stanley Cup celebration where, you know, granted, I'm obviously bitter about the 2013 Stanley Cup being a Bruins fan as I am, but it wasn't so much that. It was all like his Twitter turned into like Blackhawks Central for a while, and I was like, all right, I can get my Blackhawks information from some guy who is training for a UFC fight that he's going to lose fairly quickly. You know, so I don't really think much about him at all these days. I think I'm pretty much like everybody else.
He's a wrestler now, right? Or was he a wrestler? What's his deal? CM Punk.
Well,
I don't follow this stuff. I don't follow any of this, so I'm out of the loop.
I understand that you don't follow it, but you do understand that other people are listening to this show, and like they all do. So having who CM Punk explained to you on a podcast is going to do them no good.
Give me the Reader's Digest, you know? Give me the...
He was a wrestler. He's technically still signed to a contract to UFC.
So that's a TLDR of him. Okay, that's all I wanted. That's all I needed, just that.
I know,
He's very iconoclastic as well. And but also, he's also considered a bit of a dick, too. So it's
I've gathered that much.
He fights the man, but he's also a dink, too.
Gotcha.
He's a dick to the man and to you.
That makes perfect sense. Really quick though, do you guys follow the whole? Are you guys following the whole McGregor Mayweather thing? Because it's like blowing up every all over Reddit, especially lately. Like, does that interest you guys at all?
that thing, like, when I found, I thought to myself, you know, I might consider ordering that pay per view, and then I saw there was $99.95, and I was like, yep, no thanks.
Wow. Because
what's going to happen is McGregor is going to get knocked out in about 90 seconds.
Yeah.
Tyson Spinks all over again.
I hear that. I keep reading Mayweather's like the best boxer ever. McGregor's just a good UFC guy. And like, why does he even bother? Like, is it just for the money? I mean, I don't get why they would even match those two up. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's money.
For me, like, I don't want to, I wouldn't spend $100. The idea that he's going to get knocked out in a few seconds is not even the issue to me. Like, I wouldn't want to spend $100 for what's essentially a freak show fight that, okay, best case scenario, it's 2 seconds and he gets knocked out. Worst case scenario, it's 12 rounds and it's boring as shit. So it's
why
like
would it be boring?
For nothing or for boredom?
Why would it be boring though? What to you would make it boring?
Because of Mayweather's fighting style.
Yes. Yeah,
he's a good defensive fighter. Essentially, he's the reason why he's going to be 50-0 is that he figured out the best way to not lose. But he's not necessarily a guy who's really good at winning. If that makes sense to you,
it doesn't make sense, but I like it though.
He doesn't finish fights. Like, I mean, you don't follow combat sports, you really don't understand the concept. But he doesn't finish fights. He doesn't win fights. He wins decisions. He wins on points. He wins on not getting touched.
No, that technically means he's winning though. On a on a technicality, he's winning.
In the fight, he didn't beat someone. He just won a fight, you know.
Yeah, that's like the whole popular vote versus electoral vote. It sounds like
it's very similar. It really is.
I'm sorry, I don't want to go off on a tangent. Since you guys know about this shit, I have to ask because I don't follow any of this. So I hear about it on Reddit, and like I have to ask somebody because I don't know, so I want to know the TLDR and these sort of things.
It's not a great thing. And then Conor McGregor is playing the, you know, I'm from Ireland. I don't understand how American racism works. And he's doing stuff like calling him boy and saying he doesn't know how to read. I mean, he doesn't know how to read.
He doesn't know how to read. I've heard that.
Yeah, but you know, it can be a little bit offensive when he's calling the guy boy and saying that he doesn't know how to read and stuff.
How is that?
No idea what he's getting into, because you know, if Mayweather wants to go for a knockout here, he could just go right into what is it, the Howard Stern bit of Jerome Mamalakabudu Day, mm-hmm. and just do kill the white man, kill him until he is dead. Like that is how that fight will go, mm-hmm. and he will get knocked out because he's just not I just don't see him lasting any length of time if Mayweather. Unless Mayweather decides I'm going to let him ride for 10 rounds or, you know, for whatever reason. And I guess maybe there's I don't know if there's a financial incentive for the fight to last longer. I think they get paid either way, no matter, you know, they're not getting paid by the second.
Right.
Right. And I mean, I guess the only thing would be is if he fears any kind of punch, because he is, from everything I've heard, he is at the point now where it wouldn't take an insane amount to knock him out. He's still a professional boxer, but he's older, and it's not like he's never been known for having a strong chin, and he is kind of old. So yeah. McGregor does have, you know, he's got some stand up, but not much. And McGregor has a much stronger chin, so I think the fear of going for a flurry for Mayweather would be that he's in the middle of throwing punches and he gets tagged and taken down on accident, because McGregor is the kind of guy who can take punches while throwing. Still, not a lot of boxers really do that, so because he's like, the fear would be he's just sloppy enough as a fighter that it could be dangerous for him.
Interesting.
But realistically, there's no chance
taking punches while throwing punches. That sounds like more of a hockey fight, which is probably more of my area of expertise than straight up boxing.
Hockey gets pretty exactly. serious, huh? I've seen some stuff of hockey where people just throw down. It seems like a fun sport to watch.
You are a huge hockey fan, right? I mean, you seem like you're a pretty multi-sports fan in general. Am I correct in that?
I'm a Boston Bruins season ticket holder, and I have been since, 2007, but I also had season tickets from 98 to 01 because I moved away from Boston for a while, so I wouldn't have kept it. So I've seen a lot of hockey games over the years and a lot of fights. Now, of course, the fighting is not now what it was, and a lot of it has to do with the concussion awareness that there is, but also the fact that they're not employing guys who are just there to fight as much anymore. Like, you used to have the fourth line of guys where you would have three guys who would all be 6'2", 200 pounds or whatever, and they would all be equipped to fight the other team's crew of fighters. But I think, like, last year I went to 35 Bruins games or so. There's probably about 10 fights the whole season. Whereas about 10 years ago, there would be maybe like 30 or 35, like one per game. Wow. So it's changed quite a bit. So like, when I go on YouTube, the fighting from the 80s is just crazy, with guys like pulling shirts over heads and like there's nothing tying them down. There's like the guy for Buffalo, Rob Ray, who would end up with like no shirt on. His jersey, his shoulder pads, his elbow pads somehow would come flying off. And these guys would just be throwing haymakers without any regard. Now there are more guys who are like careful. They're almost more like boxers in terms of how they fight. But you can't. It's so difficult because you're on skates too, so your balance can just easily be thrown off.
Is there a change in the way that they're penalized for fighting as well? That's kind of caused them kind of doing it less, you think, or? Is it just that the sport has changed that way?
I think the sport has changed. I do think they now are more willing to give an extra 2 minute. There's the whole instigator penalty, where if you start a fight, you get an extra 2 minute penalty, and then I think you get like a 10 minute penalty sometimes thrown on top, and they throw that out there more often now than they did in the old days. But I think a lot of it has to do with a lot of the league, like the NHL anyway, is smaller, it's quicker, there's more emphasis on speed. And the guys who would fight were not the guys who would, who were the small, speedy guys. They also mandated visors, which was probably a pretty good idea about 4 years ago. And that makes fighting a little bit more difficult when everybody has a half shield over their eyes. And, you have to try and punch around it, and it kind of makes fighting kind of an exercise in futility.
Isn't that true about almost any fist fight, though?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I saw that one that was on Deadspin. Something happened on the Upper West Side in New York today. Like, oh, a fight on the street between a guy with a machete and a guy with a garbage can. I'm like, oh, I got to see this. And, of course, immediately they lose their weapons, and it just kind of devolves into like off balance, like throwing, and like it was just really, really awful. Like, neither one had been in a fight in a while, although the guy with the machete was scared to death because he dropped his, and that was pretty much his only chance. so he bailed out of there like the first second he could, because he had a car there. I don't know why he didn't just drive off.
See, that's what I'm saying. Like, most fights are not, people aren't making their, thinking with their better judgment when they're getting into fights. So the idea that in hockey, the fact that like you're not going to be able to do much because a guy's got a shield over his face would affect their choice to fight just seems odd to me. Was it you that I just heard on a podcast talking about someone with the record for penalty minutes in a hockey game?
Yeah, well, Dave Schultz had, he was a referee at a wrestling thing, yes, in 94 at the Slamboree, and he had 472 penalty minutes in a season. And the point I was trying to make was that is a record that will never be broken. That's right up there with Joe DiMaggio's consecutive hitting streak, or any record you want to name, Cy Young 500 wins or whatever. Because nobody has come within 150 of it in the last dozen years. Like, you would get suspended forever if you even approached that number. Because 472, just doing the math, you would have to get into a, you would have to get a 5-minute major for fighting every game for the course of the season, every single game, and somehow not get suspended. So that's 82 games, 5 minutes. That's 410 penalty minutes. So you still got to get another 62 penalty minutes beyond that just to tie the guy's record. And it's crazy that, you know, you can get up to that number of penalty minutes just, you know, and be a functioning member of a hockey team. But it was a different time then. I mean, it was the mid-70s, and, you know, different things were expected, I guess.
I was going to ask another thing. Like, do they do... Does hockey do anything like they do with like the American penal system, where you can do like concurrent or consecutive minutes or whatever? And like the idea that guys are serving like triple life, but they're doing it like concurrently. So could he have gotten so many minutes in one game that it's actually more minutes than the actual game? But it's just like because there's like mandatory minimum minutes for the penalties that he incurred.
You can do that in theory, like. With the 10-minute misconduct in hockey, that's a method of them putting a guy in the box for 10 minutes but not creating a manpower advantage. So, but what happens is if you get two of those at the same time, what they'll do is they'll send you to the box, and then they'll send another guy to serve it concurrently. So I don't know what that would be comparable to. It seems like there was probably something in the 16th or 17th century where some rich dude would pay a guy to serve his sentences for him. I don't know. My American history really doesn't start until 1700. So,
okay. Well,
it'd be nice if we still had that. You know?
Yeah. Right. We'll step off of that for a moment. So you talked about the Bruins, and then you said Boston Bruins. And of course, me being from Los Angeles, I was thinking of UCLA Bruins because that's the one I'm kind of exposed to more. Or the other side, which you might be familiar with, which is the Odd Bruin or the Flanders Brown Beer, because you're actually a pretty big beer fan yourself, you know, with the other side of our show being about beer. You told me you've been to like multiple brewery tours. How big would you say you're into like kind of the beer and the craft brew, or I guess indie brew scene?
I think right now I'm more in, because there's so many breweries opening in Massachusetts where I am, that I almost have to kind of keep a focus on what's going on here. We had a brewery open. I grew up in Woburn, Massachusetts, and we had a brewery open there called Lord Hobo Brewing, which for the name, for, you know, it's kind of a silly name, but they make really good IPAs there. The owner is a bit of a he's a little bit arrogant, but the fact that he's in Woburn, I kind of forgive him for it, because like, yeah, you're putting my hometown on the map. I really like the way it all started is kind of like, okay, I bought a 6-pack of Lagunitas Censored Ale at a liquor store in like 2005, 2006. Like, this is way better than the normal crap I buy. I'm gonna buy this every time. So I was buying Lagunitas Censored Ale every time I would go to the liquor store for a period of time about a decade ago. And then my wife and I, and my wife enjoys craft beer as much as me, we went to a brewery tour at Atlantic Brewing Company up in Bar Harbor, Maine. And it's just this little kind of hole in the wall place where they have like a barbecue pit out back. Now, of course, the barbecue pit wasn't open when we were there, but they were giving out free samples of beer, so that was perfectly fine with us. And we thought, this is funny. Maybe we should go on like brewery tours other places. And since then, I think we've been on about 25 or so brewery tours in all the like various places. Like when we went to Denver in 2013, we went to all the places there. Avery,
nice.
Great Divide. Although, truth be told, we went to Great Divide like 4 times because that was like really close to the hotel, and they have a really good tap room there. And then Anchor out in San Francisco, made the trip up to Lagunitas, and a whole bunch of other places along the way. I've been to Boulevard in Kansas City. My wife was not on that trip. And Boulevard, I guess they've revamped their whole tour there, but it was pretty damn good 3 years ago when I went down there. And I think the way beer is going is it's exploded so much that everything is just going to become regionalized. Where, yeah, I'm able to get a, you know, Lagunitas or an Alesmith out here now, but there are so many breweries around here that a lot of stores, for lack of space, they might store the local brewery. At least I think as time goes along that's going to happen.
There is kind of a territory system in the beer world opening up. It's kind of like the old wrestling territories. And being in Southern California, I mean, so close to San Diego, and then Los Angeles scene growing like that. So I think I've really only been on one, like, brewery tour. I don't even know if it really was. It was more of a Q&A with a brewer kind of setting. What is it about the tours that kind of drags you in? Because it's never really interested me to do the tours as much as just to go to the tap room and drink the beers.
Yeah, my wife and I, we laugh about it because it's like always the same. But, you can taste some of the hops. It's always like the same. It's always the same routine. But we have this weird thing where my wife works in environmental consulting, so she knows a lot about environmental health and safety of these places. So she's the weirdo who on these tours asks questions about like EHS stuff and like the what kind of glycol do they use for the heat exchanger or whatever it is. It's like really like deep detailed questions just to nerd out the person who's doing the brewery tour. You're like, oh, this is something I've literally never heard before. Why are you asking me this? Yeah, it is all kind of pretty much the same, but it's one of those things. Oh, okay, we've got to check that box. I've been to the Anchor Brewery and I've gone through the whole routine there and I've seen like their process or whatever. Like, I think part of it is to see like just how clean. I like to measure how clean the various breweries are, because of course you gotta sanitize the hell out of everything in the area. And I'm particularly fond of the cleanest breweries. Ironically, probably Atlantic was probably, maybe it's just memory being hazy. I remember that just because it was kind of like an indoor-outdoor thing. It seemed like maybe the dingiest, but they were also smaller. I remember like Anchor just being spotless clean when we were in there. So
that's interesting, too, because they're one of the oldest.
Yeah, I mean, it's since 75, I think. I'm actually looking at... because I'm doing this in my basement. I have the Anchor Christmas Ale, which is one of my favorite beers, and I go on a mission to grab as much of that as I can every holiday season. I have like a frame with a poster that has all the labels of the Anchor Christmas, because they change it up every year. And yeah, I mean, that place has been around longer than like all the, even like your Harpoon or Sam Adams in my neck of the woods, where Sam Adams, I guess, has been around since around 1986, and Anchor has been there for much, much longer than that.
Yeah, there's, so I went to a place out here, it's in Pasadena, and this is like, I'm totally breaking the rules of interviewing, because you're not supposed to just tell anecdotes about yourself.
No, go ahead. I want to know these things.
So I went to a place that was called Brew Yard, and it's the only brewery that's actually in Glendale, which is like a suburb of Los Angeles, and yep. It doesn't really matter, but it's kind of known for, out here people know of it, whatever. And they were, everything was California Common, and so they don't do, so technically they don't do an IPA, they do an IPL, because the California Common is it's an ale style beer that's been lagered. Mm-hmm. Which is like beer nerdingness that a lot of the wrestling fans who got upset about Adrian asking about CM Punk don't have any clue about what the fuck I'm talking about with beer. But so steam beer from the Anchor Steam, right? The steam beer, yep, is the California Common beer, and that's the only true classification of beer that's its own classification that's native to California. So that's why this brewery, they're Filipino guys, and all they brew are California Commons with different variations. So even their like Saison is technically a California Common, a Saison style. Like, and it was really interesting to have like this culture, because Anchor, I mean, realistically, is the only brewery that I know of that's so old in America that it has its own style of beer that they created, which is like kind of really kind of super cool about them. I guess you could say Boston Lager, a lot of people consider it kind of its own thing, but I don't necessarily know that it is. But yeah, that was like, it was kind of a cool little history lesson to get about California beer. So I've never gotten to go to Anchor myself, even though I go to the Bay pretty regularly because I'm always kind of checking out all the new cool stuff. And well, now that I think about it, like, why haven't I gone to check that out? Beyond doing the brewery tours and all this, like, are you kind of into the craft beer? Again, I guess we're technically not supposed to say that. We're supposed to now say indie beer. Are you kind of into the indie beer craze, or are you, how into indie beer are you?
I will try new stuff. If I see something new from like a new brewery that's local or even out of town, like I go to this store in New Hampshire, and I live in Massachusetts, but I live close to the New Hampshire border, which is important because you avoid bottle deposits by going to New Hampshire. So I make my high volume purchases there. And there's this place that has like Alesmith, which is down San Diego way, that had like the 394 pale ale, like the Tony Gwynn one that they came out with. And like, the fact that I can get this here for like local stuff. A lot of it though is going to the local brewery tap room. Like there's I live near Lowell, Massachusetts, and there are a couple breweries in Lowell, and one of them is called Navigation Brewing, and they're really, really good. The problem is they don't have enough tank space or whatever. Like they don't have enough capacity to actually distribute beyond the bare minimum. So the only way you can get their beer is to actually go to their brewery, which is in this kind of artsy apartment complex thing that was a converted mill from the 1800s. And it's a pretty cool setup, and they're only open 3 days a week. So they really raise demand that way. So I go down there to have their beer, and there's another brewery down in Hudson, Massachusetts called Medusa Brewing. And I went down there a couple of weeks ago, and they don't have food there, so you get the food next door. They actually encourage it, bring the food in from there, and then drink our beer in here. And that setup to me is perfectly fine. I mean, I actually had my rehearsal dinner right the night before my wedding was in a brew pub out in Gardner, Massachusetts, called the Gardner Ale House, which it has really good food, but it also has really good beer, and they've expanded their offerings as they became more popular. And that's what I like, is when a brewery that I'm accustomed to really expands out and like has a lot of different styles. Like everybody, you know, has an American pale ale, they have an IPA, but if you have a Kolsch, then you're really impressing me, because this is the time of year right now. I want a Kolsch, like today. Unfortunately, as we're doing this, I'm drinking Miller Lite because that's literally all I have in the house. Uh-oh. Right now. I'm ashamed to say.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Well, I drank all my Peak Organic Fresh Cut, which is like my new favorite beer that I just love so much, because Sam Adams stopped making Noble Pils on a regular basis. And they started doing the thing where we're still going to make Noble Pils, but we're only going to put them in the summer variety pack. So if you want to have Noble Pils, you have to buy 12 bottles of beer you don't want in order to have this. And I just won't have any of that.
That's the worst. See, now I went out of my way to stop off at a local brewery before we interviewed. I'll admit it now that I've had a couple drinks and we're started. That's why I was a little late getting started. When I got a white wine IPA from a Verdugo West is the name of the place out here. So if you're in Los Angeles, check it out. Just so that I could impress and be drinking a good beer, even if it didn't come up. But as you talked about seeing a different style at a place, I mean, I've been kind of dipping my toe in the San Diego scene a little bit more and more as I am kind of a Los Angeles. Like you said, I just go to the tap rooms in the breweries for the most part and drink beer that you can only get locally, because it's like, why drink the stuff that anyone can get? I want to drink the cool stuff that only I can get. But when I was in San Diego, this place became my favorite spot that was in San Diego because they had a Dunkelweiss. And as you said, like having a Kolsch or having something weird, it's like, how many breweries do you go to at this point in America that have a Dunkelweiss? You know, it's just, that was so cool and it was really good. But Adrian, I feel like I've taken over this whole conversation. We're supposed to probably take a break at some point. And we're talking about beer, which is something that you can get into. So Adrian, get into something.
Really, I actually wanted to tell you guys. So I follow the R Beer subreddit. Pete, do you use Reddit at all? I keep mentioning Reddit. I don't know if you use Reddit or even know much about it.
I only really browse there. I don't have an account.
Oh, okay. No, that's fine. So I follow the beer subreddit, and I saw an article the other day. The title was Austin Brewery's New Peach Beer Takes a Jab at President Trump, right? So I commented, peaches must be low-hanging fruit. And I got 106 points, 106 upvotes on that comment.
Pretty good.
So I just want to say I'm very proud of that. The other thing is I'm not a huge Kolsch fan. I see a couple of breweries here and there that I've been to that have Kolsch, and I'm always hesitant to try it because to me, it tastes too much like a lager, I guess. So, like, do you have any Kolsch brands or Kolsch beers that you'd recommend for me to try?
I'm trying to think, because right now I'm kind of stuck on the point that you were saying about you didn't like Kolsch because you just brought up Dunkelweizen, and every year I have like an annual Dunkelweizen, and I decide that I really don't like it, and my wife is like, why do you keep buying this every year? I'm like, well, I have to buy it just to make sure that I don't like the Dunkelweizen this year. Like, I got to give it an honest chance. In terms of Kolsch's, most of the ones that I like are ones that I get at the brewery. I'm trying to think of like a more mass produced Kolsch.
Yeah.
That say,
which you don't see a lot of, I've noticed.
That you would also have access
to. Yeah.
That's the thing that's kind of difficult.
Yeah.
Because I wish that like a Sam Adams or Harpoon would make a Kolsch that could, you know, go out to other areas of the country, because the places where I would have Kolsch, like at a Navigation Brewing or at the Gardner Ale House, like, you're not going to get that outside of New England, really.
Right. I'll have to just the liquor store down my street has one or two different Kolsch beers. I'll just have to pick one of those up and try them. I've been doing that lately, just something that I have never had before, and I just try it. And
does your store have a, like, oh, you can try like one bottle, and, you know, it's like it's like $2 for one bottle?
No, for that there's a store like that, but unfortunately not close to me.
Yeah.
And there's another store that's even further away that you can buy single bottles and cans, which is really cool because they have a huge selection. So I'll have to go there over the weekend and just like find maybe one or two different Kolsch beers and just pick them up. Try them, see how.
Yeah, give them a shot. You can find some good ones. Well, I mean, what is it? Grolsch is kind of a well-known
Grolsch
manufacturer. They make they're from somewhere in the UK, and they're pretty good. It comes in like a green swing top bottle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty unique and stands out. But Adrian, let's take a quick break.
Yes, let's do that.
And that's all. That's it. We'll just take a break.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com. And we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Pete, we're back, and now that we have a new official mid-show question, I'll go ahead and ask you the mid-show question here after the break, which is, Pete, are you allergic to anything?
Ooh, allergic.
Cats.
That you know of.
I'm definitely not allergic to cats, because, oh, she left. She's sitting behind me. Let's see. I thought I was allergic to mustard for all of my childhood because every time I would eat yellow mustard, I would throw it up. But now I love all mustards that aren't yellow mustard. So clearly that was a childhood problem. Apparently I'm allergic to some stupid plant that grows out in my yard in April and May because that's the one time of year where I have to take Claritin. If I knew what the name of that thing was, I would say it, but I'm too busy trying to eradicate it from my yard to even learn its name. So am I allergic to something? Yes. Do I know what it is? No.
Hey, that's all we can ask for you is to give us an honest answer to the hard-hitting questions here on Get to Know.
Yeah.
Adrian, did you have any more questions you wanted to get into before I hit like a lightning round and then we close it out for the evening?
No, yeah. So you like beer, you like wrestling. So those are obviously two big topics on this show, one of which I don't know much about. what else are you into? Are you into like movies, shows? Like what are you watching right now? What interests you pop culture-wise?
Okay. If you want to, I'm staring at a TV right now that I have on mute. And on my podcast, I have made many baseball references for really no reason because it's a wrestling podcast, and what the hell does baseball have to do with wrestling? And those people with a sharp ear and with a knowledge of baseball might notice that I compared Andre the Giant to Zach Britton at one point. Like, why the hell would somebody compare Andre the Giant to Zach Britton? Like, well, I'm a Baltimore Orioles fan. And yes, I am from the Boston area. So I'm actually watching the Texas Rangers and Baltimore Orioles right now on MLB Network. And just as I was in the middle of saying that, the Orioles tied the game in the bottom of the sixth inning off Cole Hamels.
Oh.
So all is well. And I love going not only to like, I mean, the Red Sox are the local team, so I'd have to go to Fenway locally. But I like going to minor league baseball games, just hanging out. and drinking beer, especially the New Hampshire Fisher Cats, because they have, and I hate to dial this back to craft beer again.
No, please do.
They have an insane craft beer selection for a double A minor league ballpark.
Nice.
Where
nice.
You can get, you know, Moat Mountain Czech Pilsner. I mean, where else in America am I going to be able to drink that in a baseball stadium but in Manchester, New Hampshire?
I think people are catching on. They're realizing that people don't want to just drink Coors and Bud Light anymore. You know what I mean? They want stuff that actually tastes good. So that's
yeah, I mean, the Mets play, which I think is called Citi Field, right? They're going to have a Michelob brewery in the stadium.
Nice.
Like, that's insane, right? Yeah. Like, where craft beer is now.
Well, I have to tell this story about Bud Light and how, like, I said that I was drinking Miller Lite earlier, and like, I kind of have levels of beer where Miller Lite is the macro beer that I keep on hand. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that's the big brewery that I'll have. And I developed a taste for it 7 years ago because my friend had a bachelor party up in, like, literally, like, in the woods in Maine. And they told everybody, all right, bring beer, you know, because even though there was an actual brew pub on site, we were all instructed to bring beer. And literally every person except one brought Bud Light. And I'm ashamed to say that I also brought Bud Light as well. So my best friend, Merrill, he brings a 30-pack of original Coors, and he was hailed as like this great Napoleonic hero because he brought original Coors, and that was different from Bud Light. So it had to be like rationed out over the course of the weekend, this crappy original Coors, but because it was not Miller Light, everybody was in love with it.
Nice. That reminds me of when I turned 21, the first beer I bought was Bud Light Select, and I thought I was being real fancy with it.
Wow.
And they don't even make that anymore, so it's great.
Mine was Molson Ice.
Molson?
I could not wait to go down to the liquor store in Kenmore Square in Boston and buy a six-pack of Molson Ice.
That sounds really familiar to me. I'm going to Google it really quick.
It definitely dates me to the ice beer movement of the late 90s.
Yeah, that's got the Canadian leaf on the logo there. I've seen that. Yeah, that's that's really funny. That's why. See, this is why Top Beer is a good show for us to do, and I think Tim would agree with this because we'll try beers and we'll be like, well, this would be a good beer to bring to a pool party. This would be a good beer to take to the beach. This would be a good beer to, you know, take camping with you. Because a lot of time you go to these social events and everybody brings Bud Light or everybody brings Coors, Bud Light, Corona is the other big one, Pacifico. Pacifico is like somehow a really big summer beer to some people, I guess. Yeah. But no, I always want to just, if I'm going to bring something, I want to bring something that's, you know, really, you know, different and good than what the...
Well, I'm fortunate to have a group of friends where like the default option somehow ended up being Sierra Nevada Pale Ale and Harpoon IPA. Like, those tend to be the two default options. So no matter what, you're going to at least get something acceptable at anything that I go to.
You know, so Sierra Nevada is not bad. We actually did, our recent episode was, I think Tim brought in Sierra Nevada, right, Tim? Was that Sierra Nevada?
Yeah, recently I did have Sierra Nevada, actually. You're right.
Yeah, so like, if I see that, I'll take that over pretty much anything else that's, you know, that everybody else is bringing. So that's cool. You mentioned, so you like baseball, and I'm curious about this. Is collecting baseball figurines like a big thing? Like, besides baseball cards, like, is figurines a big thing amongst like avid baseball fans?
Well, I know they had the starting lineup figures at one time, but what I do know is bobblehead dolls at baseball games make people crazy, even still to this day.
Yeah.
Like, I flew down to Atlanta last month, and I have a friend down there who's a New York Mets fan, and he got really nice seats because he works for a law firm in Atlanta, and it was Bartolo Colon bobblehead night. So there it was this in-demand thing, and I'm just thinking, what the hell am I going to do with a Bartolo Colon bobble hat? And then I wrote, well, yeah, I still want it. I definitely want it. But what am I going to do with it? Like, I'm actually looking at some of my bobbleheads right now. I'm like, what? Like, I have too many of them. I have, like, the Eddie Murray one where the bat broke. I have Joe Thornton where it looks like he has a black eye. I have one of Jesus that I bought when I was in college. I don't know what the deal was there. And then my Kerry Wood bobblehead doll that I got at Wrigley Field in 2014 where the most fitting thing happened to that. It fell off a shelf at one point, and its arm broke off at the elbow.
I
thought, there's nothing more fitting than a Kerry Wood doll having an arm injury.
Nice. I didn't know that was like a – I don't know that baseball stadiums had like theme nights for the bobbleheads, because a former coworker of mine told me that – because I live in Denver, and you know, we got the Rockies here. And I guess they have like a Rocky Star Wars theme where they have like Star Wars-themed bobbleheads like for the players and stuff. Of the players, I mean. And
yeah.
I would go to a game just to try to get one of those. That's really cool. So is that like a sort of like a thing that's just like they have different themes? Like, have you seen that with like movies and shows and stuff? Because I didn't know there was like a Star Wars themed bobblehead collectible.
You see it more on the minor league level around here. Like, there's a minor league team in Lowell, but they only play like 2.5 months, and then there's the one in New Hampshire that I mentioned earlier, and they each have a Star Wars night,
right?
And they don't necessarily have like a bobblehead for those nights, but they kind of work it around the whole movie. I mean, minor league teams have to do really gimmicky stuff to get people in the door,
right?
And they also have like bobbleheads, but a lot of the bobbleheads are stuff like, hey, you know this guy who plays for the Red Sox who used to play in Lowell? Well, here, we're giving out a bobblehead of when he was in a Lowell uniform. Like, that's how they get people in the door there. And it actually works because, like, there are people who like, collect these things and then will sell them on eBay. Like, I know that years and years ago when I was going to Washington Capitals games when I was living in D.C. There was like a Chris Simon bobblehead. And even then I was like, I do not need a Chris Simon bobblehead. I'm selling this on eBay. So I sold it on eBay to some guy for $30.
Nice.
And I was like, wow. So people get these bobbleheads and then they collect them, or they'll like pay somebody $5 like they did with my friend with one of the Kerry Wood things. And she immediately had like regrets. She was like, oh, I thought he was going to give it to his kid. And I was like, really? You thought that he was buying the thing for $5 and stuffing it in a trash bag so he could bring it home to his family?
And you said you go to minor league games. Is minor league and AAA the same thing, or are those two different tiers of?
It's like AAA, AA, and then there's like Lowell, which is like half, what I like to call half A, because it's Class A ball, but it's like the guys right out of high school.
Oh, okay. So
they get drafted and then they go to like Lowell, Massachusetts to play against Aberdeen, Maryland.
Yeah, I have to say right. No, I was just when I lived in Salt Lake City, I went to, I think it was a AAA game, because Salt Lake doesn't have a professional baseball team, but they had like the AAA level. And I remember going, and I was working for the news at the time. And they have like a whole media room, and they have like food and drinks for like the media. And I was like, wow, like if you get this at this level, I wonder what you get at like a you know, MLB game, you know, as far as like accommodations and stuff. That's pretty cool.
Well, I can't speak to the press level at MLB games, but what I can tell you is I had mentioned going to that Atlanta Braves game with my friend. He got tickets through his law firm. And we were in the premium seats behind home plate. We had access to the, I guess it's called the 360 Delta Club.
Mm-hmm.
And it was SunTrust Field in Atlanta is brand new. It opened just this season. And I'm pretty sure that night I set the all-time sushi eating record at SunTrust Field, which I don't know if it's been broken yet. It's still early in its history, but I think I ate like 39 pieces of sushi.
Wow.
And when they shut down the sushi bar in the fifth inning, I believe I shed a tear. Then I just went and had another beer.
Yeah, that's awesome. So it sounds like you really keep busy with going to a lot of different like sports events and stuff like that.
What's the last wrestling show you've been to?
Last wrestling show I went to. Let me think here, because I went to. God, I wish I had a memory for the recent WWE events like I do for 1984 WWF, where I can remember the week-to-week TV, like da-da-da-da-da. It was the October pay-per-view in Boston last year that I went to, and it was Hell in a Cell, because it had Sasha Banks, and they had the women's Hell in a Cell match that they had the person from Boston in storyline lose the match, like, and basically bum everybody out.
Well, to be fair, she's actually from out here where I'm from.
Yeah, I know.
But you know.
But when they say from Boston, Massachusetts, it's like, okay, yeah, that's fine. But going to that, like, I have a friend of mine, and he's extremely intellectual. He's one of the smartest people that I know, but he's got 10-year-old boy and a 9-year-old boy who love wrestling, and their dad don't care about wrestling, so they were somewhere along the line they were sent my way. And what happened was they had 4 tickets for this pay-per-view, and instead of bringing their mom, they wanted to bring me instead. And their mom was so thrilled that like she could get out of doing this, that she could just stay home and drink wine for an evening, like yes, go to wrestling for me, please. And the biggest thing I remember about that night was thinking, how much should I keep kayfabe with these kids? Like, how much do they know? And effectively, at some point, one of them just looked at me and said, look, the New Day isn't going to lose because it's going to be bad for merchandise sales. So that, okay, well, now I know what I'm dealing with.
Hey, that's something I've never thought of. How does that work with when it comes to young wrestling fans? Is it like, do you treat it the same way you treat the Santa Claus thing, or how does that work? Because I'm curious about that now.
I'll let them open up to me. I'm not going to explain the inner workings to them, but I think that, I assume that they probably know, but I'm not gonna explain it to them. Is at least my policy.
Oh, okay. Well, Tim, do you have a policy on that?
My policy is anything goes. I usually am pretty just honest. The same with Santa Claus and Jesus Christ.
Oh, you're no fun. You're no fun at all, Tim. You know that?
I know it's definitely true. But that brings up something I wanted to bring up earlier when you mentioned the time frame that you got out of wrestling, and then when you came back. Based on that, and based on some of the time period that you are kind of like that you remember from center stage era and even later WCW, when you came back to wrestling in 2012, I think you said around that time, 2014.
2013, 2014, yeah.
Did you know what happened to Chris Benoit?
Oh, when that happened, I knew exactly like what was going on.
Okay,
and I remember my thought at the time was, well, shit, this means I'm never coming back and watching this again, because how can I possibly watch this again? And right. I mean, 5.5 years had to pass before that happened, because like a lot of people, Benoit was my favorite guy in the late 90s. So it was, even though I had fallen out of it, I still, knew him. Like, I have a VHS tape to this day, the best of Chris Benoit. And it's like, well, what the hell am I going to do with this other than burn it in a fire because of what that guy represents at this point?
Right. So, okay. So then with that, like, obviously that was a big news story, so a lot of people heard about it. But then what about, like, Eddie Guerrero? Or what was the biggest thing that when you came back, you were like, wait, that happened? And you were like kind of shocked about something that had happened when you were gone.
Huh.
And it could be within storyline or it can be like real life happened behind the scenes.
I think one of the things was, why isn't Vince McMahon on TV all the time anymore? Was one of the things that kind of struck me right away. Another change was by that time that I started watching Raw again regularly is all Michael Cole all the time. And I thought, well, where, you know, I knew that Jim Ross had been fired, but like, maybe they should get another announcer in here at some point just to kind of, you know, spread the love a little bit. A lot of it was like, where did Vince McMahon go? Because, I mean, obviously I knew Shane was off in China somewhere making a fortune. And I knew Stephanie was still all over the product. But I was like, where is Vince? And then Vince showed up on TV in 2015 for a very brief period and then kind of went away because I think he just doesn't want to be on TV regularly anymore. That was probably the biggest thing. Yeah. Yeah. He's like 72. I mean, even though he's jacked, you know, like the eyesight goes and, you know, the other functionality. I mean, it's not going to be, he can't really bump too much.
Well, and it's something that people don't give Vince credit for because people like to pick him apart for being so obsessed with the way people look and why does he care? Why can't Jim Ross be on commentary? It doesn't matter. You don't have to see him. But Vince didn't like the way he looked on camera and all this stuff because of his age. And people pick that apart and talk shit about Vince. But I've never really heard anyone point out that when Vince started to realize in himself that he was getting too old, he was trying to even take himself off of camera. Like Vince
he literally tried to kill himself off.
Yeah, like Vince really does just, he commits to it, and it's not even like he's going to be not nepotistic, but he's not even going to be like egotistical to where it doesn't apply to himself. Like when he thought that he was too old to be in front of the camera anymore, he took himself off TV because he just has a standard for what he thinks people want to see on television. And you kind of can't blame the guy if he sticks to it, even when it pertains to himself. Yeah. But yeah, that's not the point of this show, is for me to hit like really groundbreaking wrestling takes. I mean, I'm supposed to save that for this week in wrestling, my other podcast. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to surprise everybody. We're going to have a last minute, out of nowhere, final break. And when we come back, we're going to ask you the final question.
Ooh.
Coming soon from the creative minds of the Place to Be Nation Pop Network. The audio adaptation that no one was asking for, but everyone deserved. Place to Be Nation Pop Comic Book Theater presents Watchmen, an audio feast for your ears, thrilled to the exploits of the comedian.
These are demons. It's an intergalactic invasion into this space through people. They have sexual rituals, some of the most ancient Egyptian rituals, where they believe they are possessed by entities, space aliens.
Silk Spectre.
Good. Hey, licking your finger, it's like licking a battery. It's all sort of...
Night Owl.
Well, you know how it goes. Sometimes I come down here and sit around a little bit. Think about the times when we were making the towns, doing the drugs, fucking the rats.
Dr. Manhattan.
Clearly, you don't really care about what stimulates me.
Ozymandias.
Puta. The Soviets. Vietnam. Anyone? Anyone? Mila Jovovich?
And Rorschach.
But what it doesn't change is the fact, and this is something we can all agree on, that all of the whores and politicians will look up and they'll shout, "Save us, JR!" And I'll look down and I'll whisper, "Ma."
You won't believe your ears. You won't believe the dark places your imagination will take you. Featuring cameos from some of your PTBN favorites.
Baby, that's quite a drop, I said.
Oh, they're just... pay me to handle monsters in outer space? No, no.
Maybe it was a couple of guys and they overpowered him.
He cometh up and swerve, cut down like a flower.
Fly me to the moon, let me fuck amongst my star. Oh, I guess Dr. Osterman finally arrived.
You remember Skimmy's It's Watchmen. The greatest graphic novel of all time, as you've never heard it before. transformed into the most self-referential collection of in-jokes on this or any other medium. Only from the hard-traveling fanboys and Place to Be Nation Pop.
We're back. Tim, I think you know what time it is.
What time is it, Adrian?
It's time for you to ask the final question.
It is time for me to ask the final question. Peter, you actually are familiar with the show, so you knew what to expect from the beginning, but I'll have to ask it anyways. If someone only knew you from the podcast, and obviously they don't even know you from posting on Pro Wrestling Only because you're not able to do that, what would be something that they find out about you that would shock them?
Well, my Baltimore Orioles fandom really surprises everybody to the point where at some point I'm going to create a false identity for myself where my name is Peter Thompson. I grew up in Ellicott City, Maryland. My dad was a UPS driver. I really thought this through where I've created this false identity for myself, because when I go to Toronto, people are like, oh, are you from Baltimore? Like, no, I'm from Boston. And then I have to do the whole speech. In terms of surprises, there's really not too many surprises, because I'm going to, you know, I let it hang loose on my show to the point where, well, except that I don't swear, at least on the show. I can swear on this one, right?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, okay.
I think I've been swearing the whole time, and maybe I haven't. I don't know.
No, I haven't. I haven't noticed any F bombs. So
Tim's cleaned his act up a little bit. He's very PG nowadays, right, Tim?
This is true. It could even be something, let's say, that just never comes up in the context of the podcast, because you're talking about wrestling. You're not talking about, I don't know, your aunt's amazing meatballs from when you were a kid, or you know what I mean? Like, is there anything anything along those lines? Were you in a coma when you were 5 years old?
Nice.
Okay. Well, first of all, I love to grill, and I'm very much into grilling, but a lot of people will shortchange me on that because I use a gas grill rather than a charcoal grill, so the degree of difficulty is a little bit less on that. For some reason I care very deeply about TV from the 70s and 80s, and one of my favorite television shows of all time, and I don't think I've ever referenced it on the podcast, because why would I ever reference Mr. Belvedere on a wrestling podcast other than bringing up the greatness that is Bob Uecker on that show, where ABC decided in like 1984, we have to create a show around Bob Uecker. We have to give Uecker a vehicle that he can drive, and he gets a show in prime time on Friday night. And it was magic all the way around. And I love Mr. Belvedere to the point where I watch the episodes on DVD off YouTube and all that.
Nice.
It's probably more quirky than weird.
No, that's good. That's the kind of stuff we like. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Bob Uecker is definitely an interesting guy. I mean, he was involved with WWF somewhat, right? Was at WrestleMania 3 at least?
He was at that.
Which is considered a big deal. Obviously, baseball, huge thing for him. And I guess, I just looked this up, still going strong.
He's still doing the Milwaukee Brewers games. And as a matter of fact, I'm actually going to Milwaukee in a couple of weeks. And one of the games that I'm going to is a Bob Uecker 8-ball night, which I didn't quite understand what that was at first when I signed up for it. I'm like, is it a Bob Uecker 8-ball of cocaine? What are we talking about? No, it's that 8-ball that you would shake up, and apparently it'll like spit out like his sayings on the air, which is apparently completely different from the Harry Doyle in Major League, you know, where he had all those famous lines there. When you listen to Bob Uecker do a Milwaukee Brewers telecast, it's quite fun, but it's very different from hearing him do Major League because he's not, you know, doing Christ, I can't find it, or the hell with it, or any of that stuff. He's not drinking Jack Daniels on the air at age 80-something or whatever he is.
Well, I mean, so very interesting final question answers. I'll give you that. And we got a nice little Bob Uecker chat out of it, which is nice.
And today I learned that Bob Uecker was one of the voices on Homeward Bound 2. I love that movie as a kid. Yeah.
He's one of the dogs?
He was Trixie Uecker voice. I don't know if that's a – that's who was Trixie Uecker in that movie?
I would assume it's a dog.
Yeah, let me Google image search that really quick because now I'm honestly curious.
It's just him in drag. Somehow we all didn't notice – Bob Uecker in a dress in the movie Homeward Bound.
It's one of the canine. You know what? I don't even know.
A cartoon.
He was a voice. Well, no, the Homeward Bound movie. They were.
It was a Look Who's Talking style.
Yeah, it was a live action movie. Exactly. They didn't like do the thing where you can do nowadays where like they animated the mouths. It was just like you just kind of heard their thoughts and that, because you know this is like what this came out in 96. But yeah, Bob Uecker was one of the voices on them. That's really interesting.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah. All right, Pete. Well, I guess we should let you go. Is there anything that you want to plug before we do so?
Two things. Listen to my podcast, Greetings from Allentown, on the Pro Wrestling Only feed. And don't forget to rate and review the Pro Wrestling Only feed on Apple Music and also the Place to Be Pop feed as well. Give it a 5-star review.
We're on that, right, Tim?
Yep.
We are right now.
Darn right. And also, I have a little blog that I have neglected for the last few months, but I have posted a few things recently on Bob Backlund's book, of late at section309.com. If you want to check that out, I have a whole Royal Rumble match series where I kind of review and go through all the Royal Rumble matches, but only the ones from the years that I care about. So 88 to 02 and then 2014 to the present. And also Saturday Night Main Event. I've done all of those from the beginning up through The Mega Powers Exploding, which I need to get to very, very soon, although you're probably going to hear that in a podcast in the next 2 or 3 weeks, that episode of The Main Event from Milwaukee, Wisconsin in 89.
Nice.
Well, thanks, Pete. We've had a lot of fun. I feel like we've barely even scratched the surface, honestly. I wanted to ask you about why you started doing a podcast and why you do it by yourself, but we'll have to save that for another day. Adrian, is there anything you need to plug before we go?
Yes, follow us at Lucha Undead on Twitter. Follow us on Discord at Lucha Undead. We want you guys to join the conversation and hear the conversation, which we'll figure out how to hear all the conversation eventually. And definitely follow us on Untapped. Tim, you're at Lucha Undead. I'm at Della Boots. You can get an idea of what we're drinking these days. And that's it.
Yeah, that's everything. So as we always do, we close out the show with the most important things in life, which are the, I guess, the three B's. But tonight, because of our guest, I guess it would be good Bruins, still good beers, and good Belvedere's.
Belvedere vodka.
Good night, everybody.